Blog Talk Radio.
Attention! Army wives, fall in!
You're tuned to the Internet Talk Radio Show designed specifically for Army Wives. Our life, our family, our soldier.
Brought to you by the Army Wife Network. Interactive empowerment for Army Wives. It's Army Wife Talk Radio. Up-to-the-minute information is right here with special reports, stories, interviews, and more.
Now reporting for duty, your host, the AWN Core Team.
Hello, Army families, and welcome to Army Wife Talk Radio. We are the internet podcast designed specifically for you by the Army Wife Network Core Team. This is show number 526. And I'm your host tonight, Janet McIntosh.
We're glad you're here to hang out with us tonight.
We sure are, and there's always a party going on over here at Army Wife Network. So if you're listening to our show live right now, we'd love for you to head on over to Twitter. We're always over there chatting it up. If you'd like to follow along, you can visit twitter.com/Army Wife Network. When we chat, we use the hashtag Army Wife, so make sure you're using that when you participate.
And tonight's show is brought to you by your AWN Core Team. We're a dedicated group of volunteers that are passionate about empowering you in this military life. Get to know us through our bios on armywifenetwork.com, or you can follow each of us individually on Twitter. Get a behind-the-scenes look into our Army lives, too. We're just like you.
And we have a great show planned for you tonight, like the Core Team does every Monday. Except for this summer, we have been having some, we took some nights off this summer since everyone's fairly busy. But we're back tonight, and we've got a great show planned for you. Our guest tonight will be Sarah Joy Marsh. If you'd like to learn more about her, you can visit her website at sarahjoyyoga.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Sarah Joy Marsh. She has a Facebook page as well, two of them actually, sarahjoy.yoga or facebook.com/hungerhopehealing. We also have our relationship minute for you tonight. But before we get to that, we have some catching up to do, Miss Corey. It's been a long time since me and you hosted together.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So what's been going on?
Sorry. Well, down here in South Texas, we are dealing with heat. Heat.
Girl,
oh, my goodness. We've been stuck under a area of high pressure for about 2.5 weeks, and that's just making the temperatures soar, and there's no break, you know, with rain or clouds or anything. So we've been hitting heat indexes of about 115 degrees for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, Georgia's been no better. We haven't gotten up to 115, but we've definitely been in those early triple digits. And, I mean, it's crazy the difference just between Atlanta and then, you know, 4 hours away when you get closer to the coast and a little further down south. It's, like, crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we live right on the coast since we live on an island, obviously. And
yeah,
it can
exactly.
be about 10 degrees cooler here in town, about where I work with the VA. It's been just scorching hot.
Oh, man, I can only imagine. I remember when we were at Fort Hood, and those heat waves were nothing to play with.
But, you know, we found a way to give ourselves some relief. My husband and
how's that?
Well, my husband and I are taking our first real vacation ever. And it's
that's how you're
so excited. Well, all of you Army folks will know that it's not always easy, you know, to both have the time off at the same time and be able to coordinate your lives so that you can get away together. And
absolutely.
So after 12 years, my husband and I are going to the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in South Dakota.
I know. I'm so excited for you. I actually watched a documentary one time on TV about Sturgis, and that sounds like a ton of fun. Like, that's a huge party.
Oh, it is. And it's the 75th anniversary, so I'm really excited.
Wow. Is that big?
So what about you, Miss Janet? What are you doing now? What's new with your Army Wife life?
Well, for listeners who have been following along with us, some of you may remember that I have just gone with my family through a PCS. We were in Atlanta. Thankfully, it was a very smooth PCS. I think a lot of that was due to the fact that we only moved 4 hours away to the Hunter Army Airfield area, which is found in the Savannah, Georgia area. So we're happy to be here, happy to be done with the PCS. Like I said, we were grateful that it went smoothly, but got all of our stuff. You know, everything's in the house. We've unpacked. We've even gotten rid of the boxes. So.
Oh, wow.
Normally,
that's
one of, like,
for
the
me.
Last things we do. Exactly. That's normally one of the last things we do is get rid of those boxes. And so we were on top of it, but I got super, super lucky when we moved down here. I actually got contacted by a school that's in our county that we live in. And I actually got my first teaching position. I was actually hired as a para, but then they had a position open up in preschool. And so I was offered my first teaching position. It's a preschool teacher, but I'm thrilled beyond belief. I couldn't have imagined. I thought for sure, you know, we're moving again. Going to have to start all over from square one again.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Kind of, you know. I'm sure there's so many spouses out there right now shaking their head like, yep, I hear you. And so I just got incredibly lucky that I got hired by this school. So I'm very excited, but obviously being a teacher, I had a few moments where I was kind of overwhelmed because you're in the middle of trying to get your house together. You know, you've just moved, you're trying to get a new house together, and you got a week and a half before school starts. Because Georgia, we get out in May and we start the first week of August. So our kids will be here ready to go on Monday, whether I'm ready or not. So
you'll be fine. I'm actually,
yeah, so
you know,
I'm
you
like
talk
rushing.
About being lucky. I think those kids are lucky because your energy is so positive and helpful and instructive that they can't do anything but bloom.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, most of my experience has been teaching kindergarten and first grade, so I love being with the little ones, and this will be my first chance to really spend time in the preschool age group, but I'm really excited about it, and I've met, obviously, teachers went back today for their first day back at work, and so I've finally got to meet, like, a lot more of the staff and the other three preschool teachers I work with and all the paras are, like, amazing, and everybody is so nice and helpful, and so it's just nice to be a part of that again, and you know, to be working with some great people. That helps a lot, you know, when you've got people that you can count on to kind of help ease you in.
Oh, it makes all the difference in the world. I'm so excited for you.
And how's your job going? Because I know that you started working at the VA down there, right?
Yes, I started working there in June, about mid-June, and I'm really excited about it. I have so many opportunities, and every day so far, every day I've felt like I've been able to really, really help at least one veteran get what they need and in a timely fashion. And if you followed the news, you know that with VA healthcare, that's been a big challenge. So very, very happy to help them navigate the system a little bit and make it easier on them.
Well, I think it's incredible work that you're doing. And with all the issues the VA is having, they're lucky to have you, somebody that we know is on our side. So,
yeah, you and I are both veterans, aren't we?
Yes, we sure are. We sure are. But, I mean, it's good to know that, you know, like you have your caliber, you know, quality people helping our veterans. And giving back, that's awesome. Lord knows, like you said, they need all the help they can get right now.
Yeah, it's true. We know it's true.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we've caught up a little bit, guys, so we're going to go ahead and head on over and fill you in on what's been happening over at Army Wife Network. So let's do that right now.
Army Wives, it's not your grandma's army anymore.
The military, in this day and age, plays a whole different tune. Army Wife Network is listening. We are interactive empowerment for Army Wives. A network of Army Wives band together by the power of social media. Army Wives supporting each other by utilizing the array of resources available from military and civilian-led support systems. Here's what's going on at Army Wife Network this week.
That is, and check it out.
All right, guys. So over at Army Wife Network, we had a pretty hot conversation topic going on. It was a story about 40 years later, a former sailor finds the daughter he left behind in Japan. The words that Navy veteran James Walker had longed to hear for almost 46 years appeared on his Facebook page Saturday. "Your search is over. I am found. I love you, Dad," said the message from a woman claiming to be the daughter he left behind in Japan when he went off to fight in the Vietnam War. Walker contacted the person who made the post, Emmy McGowan of Sarasota, Florida, and then questioned her mother, Tommy Miller of Mesa, Arizona. The power of social media, I'm telling you. Do you guys know a story like this? We're going to go ahead and share the link to this one. It definitely had people talking. Crazy story, just interesting as all get out. So if you guys get a moment, go take a look at it. We'll share it in our Twitter feed for you. And you can go over and take a look at the conversation over on Facebook.
That's so exciting. I can't even imagine the feelings that must have come upon him when he got that message.
I'm telling you, girl, that just so interesting. I mean, just unbelievable.
And thank goodness for the internet, right?
I'm telling you, the power of it right there. The power of it for good, definitely.
Yeah. And what else was hot on Army Wife Network this week? The power of questions. Questions, especially the ones you ask in an interview, are among the most powerful tools in your career transition toolbox. For any tool to be effective, it needs to be both well-honed and appropriate for the task at hand. To understand why questions are so important, let's ask ourselves one. Why do we ask them? There are two answers, and one is fairly obvious, and the other is somewhat obscure. Army Wife Network Tom Wolf is an author, columnist, career coach, veteran, and an expert in the field of military to civilian career transition. You can find this blog at Army Wife Network, and the title is The Power of Questions.
Yeah, he gives us a lot of great columns over there about veterans, troops transitioning and trying to find their way into a new career field outside of the military. So he's got stuff that you guys can go take a look at over in our expert section of Army Wife Network. Definitely want to check him out. Over on our social media, you can find Army Wife Network all over the place. We actually shared one of our, we could like to call them hashtag AWNLOL, some of our funnies that we post over there on Facebook to get you guys smiling and laughing. We had one that did really well, got a lot of people's attention, that said, "Someday I will be able to tell my grandkids that I am older than the internet and blow their minds." So
heck, I blow the minds of 20-year-olds daily with that.
I know, man. As soon as I posted it, I was like, oh, God.
But we're not old. We are experienced.
Uh-huh.
We're not old. We're experienced.
There you go. I like that. Definitely like that better.
Yeah, I'm not ready to face being old. I'm not even ready to face being an adult, but apparently I've been an adult for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. I don't think I'm ready to call myself old. But you guys can take a look at that graphic over in our Twitter party chat. We'll post it over there for you, or you can go take a look at it on Facebook. We hope it gives you a great giggle. But now it's time for Ms. Corey to give us some public service announcements.
Yep. Last but not least, it's public service announcement time. Do you or your business have a military-related PSA? We limit to one per show, and we ask for them 10 days in advance. You can contact us at info@armywifenetwork.com. Hilton Worldwide announced its plans to recruit 500 full and part-time work-from-home positions to provide inbound reservation support for guests through the Hilton Reservations and Customer Care operation. to support the continued growth in the Hilton Worldwide portfolio. The company is expanding its team of travel professionals throughout the country. The new virtual reservation sales position will provide inbound reservation support for Hilton guests. The positions are ideal for stay-at-home parents, military spouses, retirees, and college students who require more flexibility and freedom, as it allows them to earn an income from the comfort of their home. Hiring for the new reservation sales specialist positions are underway. Interested candidates can apply by visiting Hilton's careers website. For nearly a century, Hilton has been spreading the light and warmth of hospitality to its team members, guests, owners, and the communities in which it operates. Today, the company has 12 distinct brands and more than 4,350 properties in 94 countries and territories around the world. More than 140 million guests' lives are made brighter every year thanks to the efforts of more than 325,000 team members who are the heart of Hilton. Team members include employees at corporate offices and owned, managed, and franchised properties. As part of the Hilton's worldwide operation opportunity, the company pledged to hire 10,000 veterans by 2018. While Hilton Worldwide offers a wide variety of career opportunities in locations all over the country, the transferable and portable career opportunities with the Hilton's reservations and customer care operations are of value to military spouses. To learn more about Hilton's worldwide opportunities and resources for military spouses, go to jobs.hiltonworldwide.com/en/why-choose-us/military/military-spouses. And that's it for our PSA. Coming up next, after these quick commercial breaks, is AWN's News 6, bringing you the need-to-know stories. We'll be right back.
While defending our nation, your active duty service member can protect their family's smiles with the TRICARE Dental Program, TDP. It's dental protection that's deserved. This dedicated military service entitles spouses and or children and members of the National Guard or Reserve and their families to comprehensive dental coverage. Plus, money can be saved. We offer competitively priced monthly premiums for an individual depending on sponsor status, with little or no cost shares on many dental services. But don't forget, TRICARE dental coverage requires enrollment. TRICARE medical program options do not include TRICARE dental coverage. Call 1-855-MET-TDP1 or visit us online at www.tricare.mil/TDP for more details so your family smiles are protected and you can start saving money today. Are you looking to reach military families worldwide? Do you have a product or service to offer our listeners? Advertise with the Army Wife Network. AWN has many advertising options specifically designed to reach our military families. Visit armywifenetwork.com for details. You're listening to the AWTR Live News 6 Report.
Our life, our family, our soldier, news you can use.
Now, with our headlines, it's our own AWN News 6.
Good evening, Army family. This is your News 6 Jen, bringing you all your need-to-know news. Army Chief of Staff, General Ray Odierno, calls for an increase in troop strength. During a recent visit to Fort Carson, General Odierno said he wants 490,000 soldiers in uniform to meet the service's worldwide commitments, 40,000 more than current cost-cutting plans. The service's top general said he needs the extra troops because of ongoing trouble in Iraq, tensions with Russia, and other commitments on five continents. Odierno, due to retire in August, is ramping up pressure on Congress to fix the Army's financial difficulties driven by sequestration, a deficit-cutting plan that requires an automatic Defense Department spending cut of $50 billion per year. The Army this month announced plans to cut up to 40,000 soldiers to meet the smaller budget. Budgets passed by Congress require the Army to reach 450,000 troops by 2017, down from a wartime high of 520,000 soldiers on active duty. I'm concerned we're really on the razor's edge at 450,000, the general said before noting that his biggest fear is sending untrained troops to a future war because the Army lacks strength and readiness. The widespread need for soldiers around the globe, Odierno said, means soldiers must be prepared to head to battle quickly. He said he told sergeants and commanders at Fort Carson that they need to keep their troops trained. We have to be ready at all times, the general said. The D.C. area VA Workers Union president submitted a report Thursday detailing dysfunction by agency superiors. Several months into his job as Veterans Affairs Secretary, Robert McDonald met with the leaders of the D.C. area VA Employees Union. Bill Preston, president of AFGE Local 17, which represents VA employees who work in the D.C. Central Office, told McDonald that if he wanted to achieve his objective of turning around the embattled agency, he would have to fire a lot of executives and managers. After a several-month review, Preston sent McDonald a 39-page report last Thursday, detailing accounts from hundreds of VA workers of dysfunction and insensitivity by their superiors. Nearly three dozen managers were mentioned in the report, and each manager was the subject of at least three separate employee complaints, said two union sources familiar with the report. The sources said the report alleges that there are institutional problems with how employees, many of them veterans themselves, are treated when dealing with a range of personal or professional issues. Next week marks 1 year since McDonald became secretary. His critics say he has not done enough to clean house. Since June of last year, six senior executive employees were designated for firing over issues such as patient scheduling, record manipulation, appointment delays, and patient deaths. Three of the executives left on their own, and three were fired. Of the more than 300,000 VA employees across the country, 1,755 have been fired since McDonald became secretary, Dillon said. When McDonald visited with D.C. area union leaders last fall, Preston said he felt hopeful that the new secretary would help change the culture at an agency that consistently is ranked among the worst places to work in the federal government. A new study has found that many veterans live with war trauma throughout their lives. A recently published study in JAMA Psychiatry Journal suggests that 40 years since the Vietnam War ended, hundreds of thousands of veterans from that war still struggle every day with mental health problems linked to traumas they experienced. NPR's Daniel Wordling reports that researchers have been studying Vietnam veterans longer than they have studied any other soldiers. Congress ordered the studies to be done to understand how war affects soldiers over most of their lives. Roughly 11% of the vets they studied are in serious troubles, Wordling reports. They still suffer from PTSD or from a disorder like it. That's around 10 times the rate among veterans who didn't serve in Vietnam. Vietnam vets still get flashbacks. They're irritable, depressed. They can't sleep well. Many are quite alienated from family and friends and have trouble either in the workplace or in their family environment. When you extrapolate those findings, Marmar says that more than 250,000 vets still struggle every day. He says that if the results of the Vietnam study bears out for current troops, society should expect similar numbers with these problems 30 to 40 years from now. That's all the news for this week. Stay tuned to Army Wife Network's Twitter feed and Facebook pages for updates throughout the week. This is your new 6th Gen, signing out.
It is with great pleasure that I welcome you to today's graduation ceremony. Students, when you hear the reason or reasons for your absences throughout the years, please exit the auditorium without your high school diploma. Once you've exited, remove your cap and gown and proceed into the unknown. Too tired. Family trip. Part-time job. Helping around the house. Sick day. Starting the holidays early. just because.
Starting in the sixth grade, students who miss 18 days or more of school in a year for any reason will fall behind and risk not graduating high school. How many days of school has your child missed this year? Absences add up. Keep track at boostattendance.org today. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Army Wife Talk Radio live here on the Army Wife Network. Our live show is broadcast every Monday night. Join us in our live chat room at blogtalkradio.com/AWTR. Missed the live show or just can't make it? Don't worry. AWTR is available in archived format 24/7 via our website, www.armywifenetwork.com, or on iTunes. It's interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm your host, Janet McIntosh.
And I'm your host, Corey Blackshear. Tonight we have with us yoga therapist, Sarah Joy Marsh. She's the author of a new book, Hunger, Hope, and Healing, A Yoga Approach to Reclaiming Your Relationship to Your Body and Food, by Shambhala Publications. A practical and accessible guide to recovery from eating disorders, disordered eating, which is compulsive eating and or restricting, and body image issues.
A sought-after teacher with a master's in counseling, Sarah Joy has been training yoga teachers and mental health providers in yoga therapy tools for 26 years. She works with both the VA and the DOC, facilitating programs that build resilience, wellness, and interpersonal skills through mindfulness, breathing techniques, and yoga. Her teachings are informed by personal life events, including serious injury from a car accident, resulting in a hip replacement at 42, and early life struggles with disordered eating behaviors. We are so very pleased to welcome Sarah Joy to the show tonight. Are you there, Sarah Joy?
I am here. Thank you very much.
Excellent. We're so glad that you could join us tonight. We normally start our segments out by letting you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and where you're calling from tonight.
Well, I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. I'm calling from my yoga therapy clinic right now. I rode my bike here today, and I'll be riding home after the interview. I like to say it's uphill in both directions, though it's only uphill on the way home. And I have a little dog who weighs 30 pounds. He's physically handicapped, and that's how he gets to and from work. He rides in the dog cart behind my bicycle. So he's going to get some fresh air and sunshine later, too.
I'm such a dog lover. I have five.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed about it. I was never going to be the crazy dog lady at the end of the block, but I have one big yellow dog and four mini dachshunds.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's hilarious. And, you know, Sarah Joy, we think it's kind of important to know where you come from so that our listeners can relate. We mentioned in our intro that your teachings are from personal life events, including a car accident and disordered eating behaviors. Can you elaborate for us?
Yeah, I was in a motor vehicle accident. It seemed like a minor accident, but I had my feet on the dashboard when I was sitting in the passenger seat. And it significantly damaged my hip. I'm only 5'1", so I actually had a pretty long history of putting my feet on the dashboard. It's more comfortable than the floor in many cars. Well, the injury was minor, but the accident was significant enough that I was disabled for several years. I couldn't walk like a normal cadence. I could ride my bike, but I couldn't walk. I couldn't walk around my own yoga classroom without limping. I had a lot of intervention and a lot of therapy, and it wasn't getting better. So it ended up resulting in a hip replacement when I was 42 years old. So in a way, that makes our programs here for people who have had or currently have a disability or a physical challenge. When they come to the yoga studio, there's some life understanding and camaraderie inherent in that. Way before that, 25 years ago, I also was sort of self-medicating my own life anxieties and despairs with yo-yo dieting, compulsive restricting, compulsive exercising, really trying to find my way in the world as a woman kind of unanchored from a family system that wasn't that supportive or nurturing. And though it might have meant to be. My father is a Vietnam vet, and my mother's response to that was kind of a flatline depression, and I was lost at sea for much of my childhood. So my turning to food and dieting and exercising was a saving grace for about 8 years until I was too desperate and depressed to keep doing that, and I had to get well.
That's such an incredible story, Sarah Joy. First, I'm just glad that you're okay. I mean, it's horrible, you know, car accidents, and I'm just glad that you're okay. I take it the way you talk about yoga, that it played a part in your recovery. What initially interested you in yoga?
Yeah, interesting to say that yoga played a significant part in my recovery from my eating disorder, and as well in my recovery from my car accident and learning to walk again on two occasions as a result of the accident. So yoga is definitely a big part of my life here in Portland. And when I was saying like I was lost at sea and so on in my earlier life, I had gone to a couple of medical providers. I went to see a doctor at the ER and a social worker. And I was describing my food behaviors and my anxiety, and they basically seemed like they were staring at an alien, and I felt really misunderstood. I felt that I must be uniquely weird, and they weren't able to help me. So somehow I got this strange insight to go up into the mountains and go on a backpacking trip. I went on a solo backpacking trip when I was 19 years old, and carrying my backpack and taking the steps and feeling the burdens in my life. When I got to the top of this particular mountain, I set down that backpack, and I was so relieved to see that around me there was an awesome natural landscape that was like expansive, loving, kind. I don't know, somehow it was like a grace moment, and I started stretching my body to alleviate the pain that I was in from hiking with a too heavy backpack and the pain I'd been in from not treating my body respectfully for so many years. And that stretching caused me to feel as expansive as the view that I saw, as relaxed as the view that I was looking at. And it was like a light bulb moment. I never went back to not stretching my body after that. It became a daily experience looking again for that sense of grace and ease and awe. I didn't recover on the spot there from my eating behaviors, but I definitely had a new tool in my life, and it really saved my life. I mean, not just in poetic terms, but fundamentally on the ground, it saved my life.
That's such an incredible insight that you were. I'm so glad that you discovered it at a young age. You know, we could all learn from that kind of story about challenging yourself and opening yourself up to the beauty of the universe. It's stunning.
Absolutely.
And could you sort of enlighten us how disordered eating can be connected to depression and anxiety?
Well, yeah, it's been scientifically studied now. At this point, we have a lot more brain science. I'll say from my personal experience first that the more anxious I felt, anxiety to me felt like a racing heart and unsteadiness in my body and an urge to kind of do good and be good and make myself more perfect so I would be accepted by teachers or parents or somebody inevitably. So my anxiety was like also a compulsive doing habit. And what calmed me down when that got out of control was eating or compulsive exercising, like reduce the amount of anxiety in my body. However, if I ate too much or ate the wrong foods or I ate in a quantity that I didn't feel good about, then I felt really depressed. My body got really lethargic. I felt really like lazy and numb. And I was basically vacillating back and forth between anxiety and numbness. And simultaneously, it's known now that when our brain feels depressed, it might seek things like food because it actually soothes part of our brain function. Similarly with anxiety, it actually does calm part of our brain system. It's just that overused, it becomes very painful.
It attaches to those opiate receptors. And
yes.
What that means for the layman is that, you know, the things that make you feel high, whether it's sex or chocolate or alcohol or drugs, they all, you know, stimulate that one receptor. And, you know, for some people that's food. And
yeah.
What a great insight.
And for the whichever one of you has the five dogs, if you look at your dogs, we are mammals, dogs are mammals. We all have a limbic brain, and limbic brains, that is mammalian brains, we love to be connected. It's part of our imperative. And in the absence of connection, it turns out that food helps. I'm not suggesting food as a remedy because, of course, we need to eat to nourish ourselves, but food, ice cream is not a companion. Brownies aren't really your best friend.
Yeah, and with the dogs, I mean, that's why we have three weenie dogs and one bologna dog. I joke about it now because he's in a much better place, but he was terribly abused before we got him, and he's not shaped like a dachshund, and he's very cuddly and a little clingy, and I give him all the love that he wants and needs.
That's a great way to love yourself also, by the way, because our receptor sites for connection, love, and empathy light up even when we're petting our dogs.
Well, then I should be in abundance.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. How might the lifestyle of an army that lifestyle might lead to patterns of disordered eating?
Well, in looking back at my mother's life as much as I can by the history that I know, and also the spouses that I work with in the VA and the DOC, one of the things that I see is you're often alone. My dad was away at service. Some of the other spouses that I work with, they have periods of aloneness. And like I said, food can bring on the feeling of companionship. But we're also exposed to like the daily angst or anxiety of, will our spouse be okay? As well as, when we're in their company, then whatever PTSD is active in their brain, our brains are actually picking up on that as well. We have antennas that co-regulate each other, and if our spouse is dysregulated, quite often we get dysregulated. And we might look to food and or even the control of food and dieting to help us manage those emotions.
And, you know, Sarah Joy, we talked about it, you touched on it a little bit, but does shame play a kind of role in disordered eating?
I think shame, from my perspective, both professionally and personally, is really at the heart of all addiction and self-harm. And sadly, shame gets reinforced by those behaviors. We also experienced decades of shame for anybody who lived with PTSD because it was so isolated and so unspoken about. And the more unspoken a topic is, the more likely we are to experience shame if we're experiencing it.
Oh,
so
my goodness, yes.
We're kind of in a renaissance right now where we can say PTSD in public and people know what it is, and we can say shame, and we can say vulnerability, and we actually know what we're talking about as a community. And to me, that's just like a saving grace.
Well, I know that when I was still active duty in the Army, I sought help for some PTSD symptoms, and I was constantly shamed by my peers and even my command, so I can relate.
Yeah, shame played a big role in my early life, and I don't think it was advertent on my parents' part. It was really inadvertent. But we're born vulnerable to people seeing, caring, being kind towards, understanding us. And when we don't get that in early life, like my receptors didn't get nourished that way. I internalized my father's behavior as being my fault, and I internalized my mother's depression as something I should be able to fix.
Well,
and when I couldn't solve those things, I experienced shame about that too.
That's very understandable. I grew up in a similar household.
Yeah. And so if we know that there's like a ripple effect in our families, and we become the one like lighthouse or the one person who's looking at recovery, we can affect the whole family system, which is actually what happened in my case. My parents didn't have the resources, nor was the culture ready to give them resources, but I discovered yoga and it really changed my whole family system, which is incredible to see what we are now as a family and who we were then as a family.
Now, Sarah Joy, you talk about all behaviors reflect valid needs. What do you stress that?
Yeah, so if we look at our behaviors, some of them we might feel okay about, publicly, and some of them we might feel shame about if they were known publicly. But actually, every behavior we enact is trying to meet a need of some kind. I like to tell my students and my clients, the human being, just like other mammals, is a need-seeking engine. We want to meet needs, and those needs can be for a host of things in the human life, like for satiating hunger, or the need for rest, or the need for solace, or the need for adventure or spontaneity. Sometimes the need for individuation or uniqueness of expression, and that whole host of needs, we're going to find a way to meet them, not always skillfully, sometimes painfully, because we don't have the tools we need at the time to meet those needs, so we try other things. Hopefully, we start learning that we have needs that can be met skillfully, not painfully. But that takes some insight and probably a good therapist along the way and a good community, you know, like the networking that you do with other Army wives, where we can start having open conversations about these needs are valid. How are we going to meet them? And how exciting is it that we can ask the question?
Most definitely.
Yeah, it's just it's so much insight, and I'm so happy that we have you on the show tonight. Can you tell us more about yoga and why it's such an effective recovery tool? And, you know, follow that up by what is yoga not?
Right. Yoga is not just another way to compulsively exercise or burn calories, for example. But one reason yoga is effective is because it has a way of soothing that limbic brain I talked about before, the animal brain that can get anxious and go very quickly and biochemically, neurologically, into a fight, flight, or freeze, submit pattern. Yoga soothes the limbic brain because as we're moving, the reptilian brain, which is at your brainstem, that part of the brain says, oh good, we're moving, and we're breathing, and we're going to regulate biochemically. And as we're paying attention to ourselves moving through the yoga poses, the neocortex, which is up front, like the executive function, says to the limbic brain, you know what, I got this. It's okay for you to relax now. We're not under threat. We're not experiencing imminent danger. Right now, we're going to soothe the brain, nourish digestive, immune, and endocrine function. And as we start to feel better, in fact, the opiate response can happen through yoga as well. And your sense of mental clarity and your ability to tap back into love and kindness increases. And as our bodies feel better, we also start sleeping better. We start having less anxiety. We start eating a little better and craving foods that are more nourishing, as well as lifting our gaze to see what the other needs in our life are and how we might be able to meet them appropriately.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One of the things I love about yoga is like you were saying, clarity. I feel like you feel your in the process of doing it, almost like you're becoming one with, you know, your body and just that clarity that you get, like as when you meditate, it's like that same thing.
Yeah, it's like a moving meditation, really, and a chance to say yes to yourself.
Absolutely.
That's one of our favorite things in Army Wife Network is learning how to say yes to yourself, and when sometimes that means saying no to other people.
And that can feel very scary, yeah. We actually have a breathing exercise in my book. It's called Saying No to Say Yes. We have to know what we're saying no to, but we want to really know what we're going to say yes to if we have to say no. And it's really looking at that very thoughtfully and respectfully.
Sarah Joy, we do want to tell our listeners that the AWN Core team has some fun discussion taking place. We have a giveaway going on in our Twitter chat for Sarah Joy's book. So be sure that you go over to twitter.com/Army Wife Network. We're using the hashtag Army Wife, so make sure you're using that hashtag to participate. And maybe you'll get a chance to read Sarah some more comfortable and feeling uncomfortable and a lot more great information. So we'll be right back with more Army Wife Talk Radio in just a moment.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted.
You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Last week, I took my bride out for lunch. When the check came, I asked her, "How much?" You see, we don't go out to dinner very much, but when we do, we like to leave a really big tip. Nothing grand or extravagant, but definitely larger than the typical 15%. Our hope is that our act of kindness will make a small positive difference in the life of someone that serves others, works hard, and doesn't get a really big salary. You know, if you think about it, that description applies to your spouse. Random acts of kindness in your marriage can make a positive difference there too. Here are 5 ways you can perform a random act of kindness for your spouse. Number 1, get them a flower, or some candy, or a small gift to let them know that you are thinking about them and love them. Carve some time out of your schedule to spend really focused time on them without the usual distractions of kids or TV or computer. Number 3, give them hugs and kisses often and without warning. Number 4, write them a love note. It can be reread over and over. Number 5, take care of a small chore that they typically do without being asked. Random acts of kindness can improve attitudes, relieve tension, and reduce stress. Your relationship and your marriage will benefit greatly. This is Certified Relationship Coach Kevin Decker. Thanks for listening to the Relationship Minute on Army Wife Network. Find resources to help you with your relationships at GetROR.com. That's GetROR.com.
Want more? ArmyWifeNetwork.com offers discussion boards, military family resources, Loving a Soldier blog, and much, much more. Tell your friends about AWN with our interactive tools. Visit us online at ArmyWifeNetwork.com. ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Interactive empowerment for Army wives.
And welcome back to the show. We're talking with Sarah Joy Marsh, yoga therapist and author of the new book, Hunger, Hope, and Healing, a yoga approach to reclaiming your relationship to your body and food. Before we went to break, Sarah Joy gave us some great information, talking to us a little bit about yoga, giving us some insight into her life and how yoga has affected her. But as I promised, Sarah Joy, why don't you tell us, why should we get comfortable feeling uncomfortable?
That's a great question. I get asked that question a lot. Well, on the one hand, life is going to present us with discomforts of all kinds, from, you know, breaking your first teeth when you were a child and the gums were sore and you cried your eyes out, up to other kinds of growing pains in life. And the more narrow our bandwidth for feeling uncomfortable, the more fragile our lives become, the greater resistance we feel to the discomforts, and the likelihood of missing a growth opportunity hidden inside that discomfort is great. So, for example, when you're practicing yoga poses, and I hear that you guys practice yoga, sometimes the muscles don't feel fabulous. It can actually hurt a little bit. It's a stretching pain, but that stretching pain is quite like a growing pain. And the sensation of that discomfort, we practice getting comfortable feeling, and we start to level off with our brain, our mood, our mind, and our body, so that discomfort becomes a chance to grow our bandwidth, not to make it more narrow.
That's great advice. You couldn't see me on the radio, but I was nodding my head the whole time.
Well, I think the other thing about discomfort is that it's usually more temporary than we think it's going to be, but our idea about how uncomfortableness is going to be can really escalate the discomfort. So, like, if you have a fear of going to see the dentist, because it's going to be painful and you're worried about it for the 3 hours prior to your dental appointment, you're probably showing up a little more dysregulated in the dental chair than would be helpful. But if we see discomfort as sometimes a person is actually helping us with our health and vitality, or even emotional discomfort, we might be growing new life skills or making our marriage better, then we can think of discomfort as a chance to say yes to this, that there's a horizon we're growing towards, rather than resisting it and sort of kicking and screaming about it.
Oh, that's great advice. And to launch into the next question, why is it important to build a network of support for help through the recovery process? I mean,
yeah.
You know, again, in general, Army wives are good at building a community in each new place they are with very tight bonds among each other. So this might be a good thing to hint at.
Yeah, I think network, a sense of community, a sense of camaraderie is really so critical to our lives anyway. Just like you see with your dogs when they like each other and they bond and they do all the dog-like things that make them happy. For those of us struggling with an addiction, a food disorder, an anxiety issue, a PTSD disorder, for any of those, to have a sense that we're not alone, that we're not fundamentally isolated, flawed, broken, alienated, that's so essential to our brains feeling like we could recover. We start to feel more optimistic when we have other people who know we're taking steps that we might feel a little apprehension about, that we also feel some courageousness about. And other people's courage in our direction, their empathy, and their own movement towards a better life, that's very inspiring to us as a human being. In my own recovery, I would not have gotten out by myself. I definitely needed a specific network of people who cared and who really understood.
Well, let me ask you this, Sarah Joy. You talked to us about disordered eating. If one of our listeners or someone struggling with disordered eating, what can they do right now to get started on that path to healing?
Well, I would recommend two things. I'd be remiss not to say these two. One is buy my book, and the other is visit my website, sarahjoyyoga.com, because we have resources there for people to reach out to us. They can also email me directly right off of the website. In terms of a right now moment before you have to go to the bookstore to purchase the book, one thing is to consider that you're not flawed, you're not broken, you're not just profoundly inept, you're not pathetic. There is something in each of us called the life imperative that wants to flourish and to thrive. And lessening the shame story and considering connecting to somebody else who's got a strong recovery is an action step we can take right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And how does yoga help us build faith in our body?
Yeah, one of the things that my students and clients with disordered eating patterns struggle with, and I did myself as well, is like having any sense of trust in the body. But as you're practicing yoga, some of the things that occur, like your heart rate goes up and then it goes down. Your breath rate gets quicker, then it slows down. Your body temperature changes, and then it comes back to baseline. And as we're being mindful of that happening through the yoga poses, we realize there is an underlying body intelligence that's already programmed for each of us. To the extent that life events might interrupt or confuse that, yoga brings it back. Because of how it soothes the nervous system and how it regulates the biochemistry in us, our body starts to reawaken to that body intelligence that's already there. When we see that happening, we might fall back into a trusting relationship with our bodies, the kind we might have had when we were infants and didn't yet have any other conditioning about the body. We just enjoyed or reveled in it. Most of us as grown-ups have to find a way back home to that body intelligence. We live in a culture that's not that supportive of really living from that, so it's kind of culture-wide and then uniquely painful when we have an eating disorder of some kind. But yoga takes us all. It's unconditional. It welcomes everybody to the practice.
Well, and that actually brings me to my next question, which I can actually relate to. I remember the first time I was ready to attempt yoga.
Yeah, your phone cut, your broadcast cut out there a little bit, but I think you're asking me if a klutz can still do yoga.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, I would say absolutely yes. Anybody is welcome to the practice of yoga. It doesn't require existing skill or knowledge or non-clumsiness. Sometimes the fact is we might be a little bit klutzy or clumsy, and that can be very endearing to a yoga teacher rather than only the graceful students coming to yoga class. We teach a wide variety of students at our clinic here, and like I said, some even come with the same challenges I had faced. Some come in wheelchairs, some come with amputations, some come as they're ex-gymnasts, and they're all doing yoga in the same classroom. Yoga needs to be accessible to people at whatever physical capacity they come with.
Sarah Joy, can you describe the one-minute dashboarding activities that you talk about that boost resilience?
Yeah, and let me say, why does it boost resilience? Because each of these seven dashboarding activities nurture your brain and your body in a fundamental way, which if our biochemistry is off, if our appetite is terrible, if our blood sugar is chaotic, we won't be able to be resilient individuals. So these seven activities include staying hydrated, having balanced blood sugar throughout the day, nourishing your body, being able to raise your heart rate for some cardiovascular exercise between 4 and 20 minutes a day, having some right brain activities in your life, like creative activities, painting, art, music, poetry, having time on a daily basis where you remember that nature and that awe in nature is bigger than you are. Getting really good rest is another. And then also having a sense that on a daily basis you can tend to what I call elimination, which means the obvious, as well as being able to laugh and cry every day. And those things together support our resilience from the biophysiological level. Then we can build resilience emotionally, mentally, and spiritually as well.
And, you know, Sarah Joy, you've been such an immense pleasure to have on the show. What great advice and insight you've given us. Could you tell our listeners where to go to find out more?
Sure thing. Yeah, my website is sarahjoyyoga.com. That does have two Y's in it. Sarah Joy is SarahJoy, yoga.com. And like I said earlier, we do take emails off of that website directly. We have a phone number on the website also, and we love visitors.
Well, Sarah Joy, I can't thank you enough for being with us tonight. We really appreciate you taking time out for our
meeting. Well, it's been a pleasure to be with both of you as well. I wish I could see pictures of your dogs.
I'll send some to you.
Oh, that'd be great. Send them by email. I'll send one back about my little dog here.
Oh, yay.
Thank you both very
thank
much.
Thank you again.
You're
thank
welcome.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Have a good evening.
Thank you, you too. And in the meantime, join us on www.armywifenetwork.com to stay connected to resources, information, expert columnists, and share the journey with many of our experienced contributors or follow along in any of our social media outlets such as Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
Yes, thank you guys for being with me tonight. And AWTR will be back, Army Wife Talk Radio, August 10th, 2015. So,
and this is Army Wife Network's core team signing out.